Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We hope you had a good weekend and are ready for what is going on today. And a hot weekend. Oh, goodness gracious.
It was hot.
The heat index, I think it was 96, or what was it? It was 92 degrees actual temperature. And then with the heat index, it was, what, like 180, 190, something like that? What was it?
Is that true?
No, it was, I think 116.
Yeah.
It was very warm.
It was very hot.
Yeah. And so while beautiful, still, you know, then last night a series of storms moved through, blew some stuff around, drenched the ground, and now it's nice and cool. So here we go to start off our week. It's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock on this 23rd day of May. We want to introduce the panel to you, and I'll get to that in just a moment. Before we do, I want to go to Alan Chartok, because today is a special day, because on June 6th, we will start this portion, our roundtable fund drive. We will start on June 6th, where Alan and I will go through and finish raising the money. Now, what is important now is that if we get that number down, boom, 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 boom,
well
boom,
put, well put,
by the through the lockbox, then that's money that we don't have to make on air. You see, on June 6th. So the official opening of we should have worked this out, Mike. We needed some sort of like opening like of the lockbox. Okay, thank you. You don't really have to. But the lockbox is open, and we're working on now. Alan, I will turn this over to you. I just want to mention that so far in that lockbox, we have $230,000.
Yeah. Well, and we have to get a million before we're done here. Now, remember how many people listen to this radio station? It's astounding. We have 500,000 people approximately who listen to this radio station on a fairly regular basis. 500,000 people. That's a lot of people.
That's a half million if you're keeping track.
That's right, Joe. You're so right. And guess who just walked in? I'll give you one guess.
No. I was gonna make it sound like you'd been here since 8:30.
Oh, well.
That's why I prolonged the. I put off the introductions.
You are.
Livy Post just came in, and we love her being here.
And
but go on.
Big smile on her face, which makes Monday possible.
So, Alan.
Yes.
Go on. The lockbox.
So the lockbox is now open, and now if we get there before we have the fund drive, which we have not done for a couple of years now, we'll all be happy, and the children will cheer and eat their ice cream. So I can only say this is going to be a real challenge for us, and we can do it today, right now.
Now, I have two rumors that I'm looking for you to
sure.
substantiate. But one is that we're a little behind.
We are.
And we need to make that up. What do you know about that?
Well, there's a lot of ways to examine your last statement.
Okay.
So if somebody says you're a little behind, that's not that could be misinterpreted, and you want to be careful.
In the lockbox sense, how do we mean that?
You want to be very careful about that one.
There's an attorney next to you, Alan.
Yes, yeah. And not only an attorney, but an excellent attorney who knows what she's doing. Okay, so here's what we can do this because we all love the station, and I cannot tell you. I go everywhere, and people say to me, you know, everywhere means I walk to Great Barrington Main Street and back home. And people say to me,
whoever I talk to at 2:30 in the morning says to me,
I love that. I love the station, they say. And sometimes they say, your station. And I say, ditch the why. I love our station is the correct appellation. And that's because you have made it. And right now we are a little bit behind. And in opening the lockbox, I think we have about, what, 230,000 out of the million.
That is correct, yes.
So if everybody does something today, walks to a phone, no, not yet, not till, yeah, it's 9 o'clock, yeah.
I mean, the easiest way is to donate online. That was the second point I was going to get to.
Good
is that donating online is best because we don't have any volunteers. Obviously, we don't have volunteers in the building because we're still being safe because the COVID numbers are still very high. So, and we don't have, we're just opening the lockbox. We're not doing the official drive, so staff. But we do have, now, if you call, we'll take the phone call, of course. But the easiest way to donate right now is online, WAMC.org.
WAMC.org.
Yeah.
You don't want to convert those middle numbers. I'm not going to say it because then somebody will listen to it. In other words, some people say, I love W, and then it's not WAMC. They put the M first, you know, that kind of thing. So we want to make sure that doesn't happen so we don't say that. Right, Joe?
That's right. Although,
that's right, Alan.
That's right, Alan. What did I say?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's right, Joe.
Oh, is that what I said?
Yeah.
Wow. Man,
I know.
We're only 5 minutes into this.
It's early.
1-800-323-9.
It was so hot this weekend. We have a little pool at our house, you know.
Yeah.
The water was boiling. Were
you taking bets?
It's
that kind
boiling.
Of pool. Ah.
Okay. No.
It was the Preakness weekend, after all.
You guys
not
could
so little,
actually
and I didn't
take
wanna,
this on
know,
the road. I just want to point that out.
Thank you. We tried.
Thank you, Fran. That's good. Yes. You're absolutely right, Fran.
What did she say? I didn't have to hear from her.
Oh.
Do I want to know?
Yeah. She said we could take this on the road.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but with no reason to take it on the road.
We're already here.
Half a million people already listening. At least they were. I don't know what they're doing now.
And I know what's going to happen. They're going to get on the phone and they're going to say, okay, it really is my station, yours. And that's what people are saying. And I do depend on it. I do listen to it. And I want to do something right now. So they're going to go to their apparatus and just go to WAMC.org and put in some money into the lockbox. And we could be done today. Literally done today. We need $1 million, and we could. Why are you laughing, Libs? The answer is we could be.
Absolutely.
And have been.
You know what's amazing about this is that we are a quarter of the way through the fund drive before we have even officially started.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's amazing. Let's not lose sight of that fact.
No.
And then add to it that we have 2 weeks between now and the time that we officially start active on-air fundraising. So in that 2 weeks, is it so much to ask to try to get as much in? And we don't even want to put a goal because that would maybe quiet you in some way. We think we can get the million before we even begin. You see,
I think you should get the million before
there
you
go.
Even begin.
When he tried to take it off, he had forgotten the combination.
What is that from?
I don't know where it comes from, but it's, you know, boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy? You know that song? You know, boom, boom, ain't it to be... Yeah, you know that, right? You got kids. Yeah, they know it. So a man bought a combination suit of underwear. He wore it 9 months without a single tear. He wore it 9 months without exaggeration. But when he tried to take it off, he forgot the combination.
All right. There we go.
Is this something that children...
How's that for the act, Fran? Bring that on the road.
You just got to start booking now.
All right, we could sell out Northampton, couldn't we?
Maybe.
Absolutely. My porch is about 4x10, so you could definitely sell out my porch.
All right. Well, it's all good. Whatever you can do, WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and if you go to the website, it just says on there very loudly, donate now. And it's as simple as that, and it'll walk you through the process. If you go to the drop-down menu, you can see some of the various premiums we have and things and helping various organizations and that kind of stuff. That's all there. So there's really no reason for you not to do it now. And every moment that we do that is less than we have to do of active fundraising because we won't have now people will say, well, what's the difference between what you're doing right now and what you're doing, what you'll do on June 6th? Well, June 6th, we won't have a panel.
Right.
No.
And you don't want to miss that.
No. And we won't, and we'll be missing because I believe the January 6th hearings are starting that night, so we would normally be talking about all of that stuff. So we want to have that available to us. God knows when the decision is going to come from the Supreme Court to the final word on Roe. So all of that. So you want your regular programming. So if all you have to do is do it now, WAMC.org.
Let me add to that, Joe. That people understand that this radio station that they depend on, that they listen to, that they tell me and you and everybody else that they love, they listen to the roundtable and they pick up on everything that's said there. Every time there's a hint of disagreement, they enter into that.
There aren't. There's no hints.
Not really. No, because where there's love, there's no more is needed. So, so that's why... Folks, I know you feel strongly about this radio station because you tell me that all the time. If everybody could go to their computer right now and write in WAMC.org and look at the drop-down menu and do what you can at this moment. And if you have to, if you just have to, you could make a telephone call at 1-800-323-9262. Again, 1-800-323-9262. And, you know, just say it. And we could be done. Now, you don't believe me, but it's true. I've seen us come close to this. We could be done by 11 o'clock today.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, that's right.
Sounds good.
All right. We're ready. 1-800-323-9262 if you absolutely have to make a phone call. But better yet, panel. No. WAMC.org.
Right.
WAMC.org. Now, panel at WAMC.org is how you can get in and write us a letter. And we would love that, too. Also, we've been doing promos here, and if we'll mention this as well, but if you want to support the DeJoy Postal Administration, all you have to do is and support them. put a check in an envelope, and you can send it to WAMC 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York 12206.
Oh,
did you say 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York?
Albany.
12206.
Yep, that's all you need to do. And that's on the website, too. Okay, let's go to stuff. And that includes the introduction of all our wonderful panelists, and we will talk to them. Sienna Freeman Tolbert is here. She is an immigration attorney and a partner with the Albany law firm of Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna. Sienna, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Does that mean you get to boss people around since you're a partner?
No. We work in a collaborative environment.
Oh, of course you do.
No, we're
cooperatively. it's kumbaya at Whiteman.
We're partners in working together to try to push people around.
No, they don't push each other around. They push the people on the other side of the desk.
Yeah, there you go.
There's no pushing at Whiteman.
No.
Okay.
Research professor, Stuart Rice, honorary chair at the University of Massachusetts Amherst College of Information and Computer Sciences.
Woo.
That's CICS, between friends.
Whoa.
And faculty associate at the Bergman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Fran Berman is on the program. Good morning, Fran. How are you?
You know, I'm so involved in the fun drive now, I've forgotten the news. So, you know, just saying.
Well, we'll
just saying.
We'll remind you. Don't you worry. We'll remind you.
I wonder who invented that just saying. That is a terrific thing to do, isn't it?
Just saying.
You know,
just saying.
As many things I say, it's probably a California phrase, although I have no data supporting that. But,
Data, schmeda.
You know, every once in a while...
You have me as your California dialect expert.
Now, so. Every once in a while, we get letters about you, Fran, of saying that you often say, you know. And I say, she's a Valley girl.
I know. I said it again. Teresa Bourgeois has told me that. It's It's like, you say you know all the time, and I'm working on it, you guys.
All right.
I am failing.
You are terrific, you know.
Fran, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying you know, because people have written in and said, made the same complaint about moi.
Yeah. Really?
And I always say, well, first of all, here's two things you need to know about Fran. One, she's a genius. Two, she's from California.
Okay.
Enough.
Yeah. No, but she's been a certified genius.
You, I say, she's a genius.
I haven't noticed it. That's what I expected. You get letters that saying, who is that woman who uses the word dude?
Yeah, well,
dude.
Yeah, you know. Well, anyway, yeah.
Well, thanks for calling me a genius, Joe. I appreciate it.
Libby Post, you are a genius. Yeah. You are also a political consultant.
Yes.
I just want to say just a couple of words to you personally. Our friend Ken Screven passed away, and you really have been working on the arrangements for his funeral, and did so much work as he was getting ready to pass, and trying to make him as comfortable as possible in his last days and hours. And that was absolutely beautiful. The community support and outreach has been absolutely beautiful. So, Palace Theater, right?
Palace Theater, Saturday. The viewing is at 9:30, and the service will start at 10:30. It's going to be per Ken, you know, just making it just like Ken. It's going to be a multimedia event.
Yeah.
Lots of Diana Ross, videos, speakers. I think Ken would want to be there.
And you're putting it all together?
I'm helping put it all together. I've lined up all the speakers and the video stuff. Actually, Channel 6 has been great.
Well, we should all be so lucky to have a friend like you.
Well, thank you. Jim. Yeah, thank
that's,
you.
That's really
You're
lovely.
You're a wonderful person, Libby.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. By the way, just as a record, that may even be better than genius.
Oh, I think so. I think so. I'll take
I
that.
Promise you, ladies and gentlemen, when we get back, we will get into today's news.
Whoa.
We will talk about what is happening in the world. In the meantime, go to our website, wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. Okay. So, again, we've opened up the lockbox this morning, WAMC.org. And also, we are getting started in talking about our topics for the day. We have a wonderful panel, Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Libby Post, and Sienna Freeman Tolbert. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org.
And I hope our wonderful Amber, Joe, will come in and tell us how we're doing, whether there's a pickup in the traffic of people making donations.
I think I can bring that on here.
Yeah, at WAMC.org.
What month is it?
I don't know. It's January.
June 22nd. It isn't, but it's going to be. It's a June fund drive. That's what I had to look up.
That's
to
in
find
a month because today's the 23rd of May.
Right, but June 2022 is the fund drive we're talking about.
But see, isn't it true that it's always a fund drive around here?
It's always fun around here. That's for sure.
That's all we think.
We do think that. All right, let's go to. See, Alan, we're already at 2:36. 2:36. We were at 2:30? 2:36. Okay. Here we go. There are, I want to talk about this report that came out regarding Southern Baptist leaders mishandling sex abuse crisis. This is a report. This has been front page news around the country. Two major reports, one in the Times, one in the Washington Post, New York Times, Washington Post. National leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention suppressed reports of sexual abuse and resisted proposals for reform over two decades, according to a third-party investigation published by the convention Sunday. The report also said that a former president of the denomination was accused of sexually assaulting a woman in 2010, a claim the report described as credible. Sexual abuse allegations and the church's handling of them have roiled the convention for years. After mounting pressure from survivors of sexual abuse in Southern Baptist settings, delegates of the denomination's annual meeting last summer voted overwhelmingly to commission the report and demanded that its 86-member executive committee hand over confidential documents and cooperation. The report covers abuse reports from women and children against male pastors, church employees, and officials from the year 2000 to the present, so the last 21, 22 years. The release of the report represents an extraordinary moment for Southern Baptist, the country's largest Protestant denomination. As the group nears its annual gathering in June, its conservative membership, which has fallen to its lowest count in four decades, remains sharply divided by debates over race, gender, and politics. The denomination's president, Ed Litton, whose term expires in June and who is not running for re-election, said in an interview on Sunday night that what he read in the report was, quote, far worse than anything he had anticipated. We knew it was coming, he said, but it is still very challenging and surprising, shocking, to have to face these realities. The denomination has long emphasized that its decentralized structure meant it had little ability to force churches to take any action because legally each church stood alone and did not report to higher authorities. But the report alleged that a handful of powerful leaders had the ability to stonewall abuse reports and attempts at accountability and reform.
This is not my insight, Joe, but reporting to a higher authority is something we all do.
Yes, especially if you're going to have Levy's rye bread. But the duplicity of this,
yeah,
I know you do. The duplicity of this is just outrageous. It really is. I mean, they're saying, oh, we can't tell our local churches what to do, except, of course, when it comes to abortion, taking stands against abortion, gay marriage, gay rights. That they can tell them what to do. But when it comes to straight men abusing straight women, oh, no. No, no, no. We can't do anything about that. I'm sorry. You know, it might open us up to a lawsuit. It might do this. It might do that. It is the most extreme example, one of the most extreme examples of patriarchy mixed with religion I've seen in a really long time.
I agree with every word you just said. I just want to add to it, though, when you said straight men and straight women. But there are children involved in this, too. Many,
yes.
many children
many
involved
children.
In this,
I mean,
according
you know,
to the report.
And these are folks who were allowed to have sex. So, you know, in the Catholic Church, there were children involved because of all the sexual repression going on. And there's that. But these are folks who there's no they don't say you can't have sex in the Baptist church. And this is about men and their power.
That's exactly what it is. My understanding is when there was the big controversy big violations in the Catholic Church, a lot of other churches in different denominations started enacting what you call safe church policies. They all took a moment to step back and look at their own policies. And it's very telling that Southern Baptist did not do the same. Moreover, I think about the statute of limitations. This report talks to children and also women. Most states have no statute of limitations on children, but for women, there are statute of limitations on when they can bring a crime. And that, to me, it's very convenient that you waited over 20 years because now they can't convict anyone. Where's the evidence? Evidence is key during this time. So it's all very convenient that 20 years later, now you want to look back and, you know, do an accounting.
And this coming from a brilliant lawyer on our panel. Thanks for being here.
A genius.
I think everybody is brilliant on our panel.
We are.
Thoughts on this, Fran?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything everyone else has said. I look at something like this and I'm really appalled because this kind of abuse of power, this kind of behavior. I mean, I can't really imagine the situation that gives rise to it. And then you add the layer of spirituality and religious culture, and, you know, which comes with it the veneer of ethics and trust and, you know, morality, whatever that means to an individual. And it's particularly egregious. You know, I sort of don't know what to say, although it seems to me so tragic that in religious communities of many stripes, you're seeing this kind of abuse of power. And, you know, I imagine that if you're the victim of something like this, you know, in some sense, you never get over it. You know, it's just hard to imagine why it's okay and why people cover it up. I mean, you know, if you see that kind of horrible thing happening in your community, why wouldn't you just want to get to the root of it? I really don't understand.
So one of the things... one of the things, Libby, that got me on this is talking about the what they have seen as the reduced number of people within the church, that they have seen declined membership within the church, which the first thing that I thought of, and maybe this is unfair, but the first thing I thought of as I was reading that is as a decrease in people and yet an increase in power that is seeing Roe v. Wade be overturned, the weakening of gay rights, the making of trans issues top and foremost for Republican politicians. So even though, and we know this from polls, that even though the support of the people as a whole show there's great, you know, is support for such things as pro-choice,
right?
Obviously LGBTQIA IA plus. I apologize. Rights that we're seeing the numbers of people in the church slowly declining, and we're seeing that across religion in general declining.
You are seeing numbers declining among mainstream churches, and the Baptists, Southern Baptists, are still considered mainstream. But you are seeing numbers climbing in places like Joel Osteen and those kinds of folks. And you are seeing the politicization of these folks. I mean, this is, you know, this is the moral majority. Ralph Reed, this is what he wanted when he started in that rhetoric in 1980.
Ralph Reed.
Yes.
I have not heard that name in
right.
a long time.
But this is exactly what their long-term plan was to build this base of support on the local level that ultimately percolated up to Congress, the U.S. Senate, Trump, because Trump's not a religious man. He's just a huckster who they said, oh, he agrees with us, or he doesn't agree with us. He will mimic what we say so that he can get elected and destroy everything that's any progress that's happened thus far. But this has always been their modus operandi. It doesn't really matter what the majority of the people think. They now have the Supreme Court. They may very well have Congress after the midterms. But I can say this, on a local level, which is where I work, because I think that's where you can have the most impact, we saw the turning away of these people in school districts throughout the Capital Region. You know, there was a bunch of parents' rights, book banning, Neanderthals running for school board here, and only a minuscule amount of them got elected.
But Libby, doesn't that tell us a little bit about where you live as opposed to...
Yes, but the thing is that we're in Albany, New York, we're in the Northeast, and there were a lot of these folks running for school board because that's part of the agenda. It always has been.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's...
But Libby, you're really talking about something that I think is, for many of us, a really promising trend, which is all of that really hardcore extremist viewpoint. You're starting to see a tide starting to turn. You're seeing a little bit in Georgia where people are just saying, hey, we don't care if the rules are... you know, more and more stringent, you know, let's get us to the polls. We're seeing it in the repudiation of folks that were supported by Trump, you know, little by little. So, I mean, I do think that, you know, in some sense, some people have kind of hit the wall and they're kind of coming back and saying, this is just too much. And maybe this is a piece of it. I don't know. I'm making this up. But it seems to me to be an interesting trend.
I hope you're right. That's all I got to say. Because, you know, I may be from New York as opposed to Missouri, but you got to show me here.
What I can say is some of my family members that go to more conservative churches, I think for women specifically, it started to hit the wall when you started to say things, you know, you have Roe v. Wade, but then you say IUD, take away your IUD, taking away my birth control. Now you're picking out people in the church who are trying to control, you know, what happens with their body, and now they're feeling it personally. And I think that's where you're seeing that the really uber conservative Republicans are losing on that front, because now they've gone, you know, a little bit past the situation to regular women at all, you know, at all age ranges who want to put their daughter on birth control because she has a crazy period or something right. like that. You know what I mean? Like,
I was on it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't, you know, and so now people are starting to have these conversations like, wow, you're really reaching in to into my house. And I think that's where it's going to, you know, boomerang back a little bit.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, Libby Post, and Fran Berman, we welcome your letters. The lockbox is open, WAMC.org, WAMC.org.
And for us, that, Joe, that's life or death. It really is.
And you can write to us here at the panel at panel@WAMC.org, but the lockbox is open, WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Libby Post, and Sienna Freeman-Tolbert. We have a couple of letters. We've been talking about Southern Baptist leaders mishandling sex abuse crisis, that according to a report that was released yesterday. And we go to this from Paul, who said, Men never do evil so completely and cheerfully as when they do it from religious conviction. Then Ricky writes, I am nauseated by that other abusive nomination. The Roman Catholics denomination, I believe, has one of their high-up officials, the Bishop of San Francisco, barring Nancy Pelosi from receiving Holy Communion. Doesn't he know that his church has not recovered from the moral bankruptcy of being a worldwide sex abuse ring? We saw this during, Alan, of course, you know this all too well. I saw this during the Mario Cuomo years of the cardinal in New York refusing, saying to refuse to give communion to Governor Cuomo for his thoughts on abortion.
Front page headline, he'll burn in hell forever.
Yeah, and, this is why people have to go church shopping.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Or temple shopping.
I mean,
or
it's all according if it's important to you. And, you know, there are plenty of people where, and part of it is that religious institutions engaging in this kind of political discourse turns a lot of people off. And so they don't. They just don't.
I mean, I think that's why you see a lot of the newer churches, they don't have their denomination listed. They'll have something, you know, like freedom or, you know, liberty, love.
The life.
The life.
Yeah.
but they won't say the denomination, even though they're affiliated, because that's how you bring, you know, the younger people in, bring them into the church, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's the idea that they're not attached to anything that attracts younger people, I believe.
Right.
You know what I mean? That they have, I feel like they're free, they have this more free spirituality, more choice in their spirituality.
Let's see. We go to Janet, who says, I believe that sexual abuse in the Catholic Church is not the result of sexual repression. The abuse has taken place for centuries because predators have known that they could use the structure of the church to abuse others while shielding themselves. Meanwhile, we got this from I am nauseated. Oh, no, that I just read that, didn't I? The viewpoint of the religious right is that abortion is murder, writes James, which violates the commandment, thou shalt not murder. The religious right also enthusiastically supports Donald Trump. Whatever happened to thou shalt not lie, steal, covet, commit adultery, make false idols, .. I guess the other commandments don't matter. That from James.
We keep seeing that over and over and over again.
Yes. Let's see. We go to Dare in Bennington, Vermont, who says, well, boom, boom, ain't it great to be crazy as now stuck in my head. Thanks a lot, Alan. All right. We go.
We welcome, some things on the radio really count.
We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Moving on to other topics in our few moments before our top of the hour break this morning, I want to talk about the concerns over monkeypox. Here we go.
Just when you think you're out of the woods.
Right. There's something else to worry about, kids. President Biden said Sunday that the United States is looking into what vaccines might be available to protect people against monkeypox, saying that everybody should be concerned as cases, and that's everybody should be concerned, as cases continue to spread around the world and some countries beef up their treatment stockpiles. We're working on it hard to figure out what we do and what vaccine, if any, might be available for it. Biden said this from South Korea, where he has been on an official visit. Biden said that the recent spread of monkeypox infections identified by the World Health Organization in at least 12 countries where the relatively rare disease is not endemic could be consequential if it continues. Health advisors haven't told me the level of exposure yet, but it is something that everybody should be concerned about, said the president. It is a concern that if it were to spread, it would be consequential. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said that the U.S. has vaccines available to treat a potential monkeypox outbreak and that Biden has been briefed on the case tracks domestically and abroad. He's being apprised of this on a very regular basis, Sullivan briefing journalist Sunday on Air Force One after departing South Korea. Scientists, meanwhile, are rushing to figure out what is causing the infections and how to respond. The WHO, who has received reports of 92 cases confirmed in a lab and 28 suspected cases under investigation in the United States, including in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I believe.
Oh, boy.
Do we? I don't know if we have it here in New York yet or not. I've not.
I think one case
in New York.
Yeah.
Sienna's moved away. Move far away.
So far, the only two countries not on the list, Israel and Switzerland, but they reported their first cases on Saturday. So, studies suggest that the smallpox vaccine is at least 85% effective against monkeypox, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which notes that the U.S. has licensed two vaccines to prevent smallpox, with one being authorized specifically for monkeypox. Okay, cue the scientist. Fran, what do we need to know in the early days of monkeypox of what we should be doing? And God forbid, what did we learn from COVID that perhaps can help us get a handle on this?
So, yeah, you give me the easy question. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Well, that's because you are the smartest among us.
This is not true. You guys have to, you know, this is a myth that you all believe. The you know part is right there. You know, I was looking at this because, you know, these things pop up in our first, because we're all sick to death of COVID. Let's just face it. You know, I'm trying to avoid absolutes, but I don't know anybody who's not sick to death of COVID. So you see this monkeypox and you think, is it ever going to end? You know, am I ever going to concert dance again? Am I ever going to, you know, go someplace and not think about where I were if I wear a mask again, blah, blah, blah. It's the early days. Here's what we know about it as far as I've been able to read. It's a known disease. It's a disease for which there are vaccine options, and there are two smallpox vaccines, one of which is specifically used for monkeypox and I think has something like 85% effectiveness. It is less transmissible, although there's a really weird non-link, and I really emphasize the non-link between gay sex, and which the World Health Organization is saying, you know, don't jump there. But the CDC has some weird stuff on that about a 2022 case coming from Canada to the U.S. So I would say we really don't know much about that, and that's an easy thing to be blown out of proportion. It's no one seems to think it's a thing who knows, you know, who is talking in the as a medical professional. What else do we know? We know that the incubation period is usually 7 to 14 days. It could be 5 to 21 days. It's less transmissible, but for example, there seems to be a case in Massachusetts that I read about. But the cases are, you know, in the ones in most places, but they're growing. So, you know, caution. And it seems like, you know, okay, so what does this mean to all of us? Wash your hands. You know, I always think masks can't hurt. I mean, no one's saying, you know, necessarily wear a mask, but it is transmitted in terms of droplets, and respiratory droplets, for example, is one way. But, you know, wash your hands and be careful, and, you know, let's keep on the news and let's not panic.
Do we know about monkeys? Because, are monkeys really involved in this, or is that just something that came about?
It comes from animals. I mean, I guess there was initiating events when they recognized it through monkeys in Africa, but it comes from cuts in the skin and contact with animals who are infected. So you want to be, you know, a little bit careful about that. But there, you know, there's no reason for panic now, but as all of the really important questions Joe asked, is, you know, what do we do now? And, you know, unlike COVID, where we had to go through our own denial and political stuff, let's just try to be smart about the science. We'll have to pivot a lot as people know more, because that's the way science is. Science doesn't promise you any answers. It tries to come up with really plausible explanations that are data-based. And so, you know, let's keep our eye on it and try not to get too depressed.
I wish we could. Alan brings up a great question about monkeys, because we obviously we have chicken pox.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now we have monkey pox. And monkey pox, I just wish, I want to take more seriously, but because it's called monkey pox, it's harder, right? I mean, I'm not making fun of it, but it is. You know, like maybe we could have come up with, like, some scientific name it with a number, and then that would have been better than monkey pox.
So if you see your monkey playing with your chicken, that could
be very, very careful.
Which I believe is illegal in at least 32 of the contiguous states.
Right. Yeah, but
well,
you know,
maybe we should have called COVID bat virus or something. Yeah, I don't know, but we didn't.
No.
We
had to demonize a whole group of people.
Or animals.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. You know, Fran, you said something about, you know, gay sex. The right is going to run with this.
It was the weirdest darn thing, Libby, and I didn't even read this from the news. I went to the CDC website, as, you know, like some reasonable scientists would do. And then they had this whole discussion about, you know, this Canadian person, I guess, who would, or this person who had come from Canada to the U.S., and then this whole connection. And then I tried to look, you know, all of these things I'm doing what the rest of you do, which is sort of looking it up and trying to investigate. And you know, then you see all these other people that say, hey, you know, we really have no data, you know, don't go there until we know something. And don't use it to exacerbate all of the problems we have now.
But you know what's going to happen is that 4chan, that lovely site where all the idiots on the right go, they're going to start in. They're going to start saying, oh, monkeypox, the new AIDS. I mean, just wait. Just wait.
We'll hope that we have a handle on it very, very soon, see where this goes. We have to take a break. We're desperately late for break. We'll do that, and we'll come back with your letters, and we'll move on to topics right after this. Because Alan just asked, the music this morning is Sun Ra Orchestra. And the album that we are playing is Sun Ra Orchestra meets Salah Ragab in Egypt.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up.
Now, more importantly, Sun Ra Orchestra is going to be at the Solid Sound Festival at Mass Mocha this weekend. SolidSoundFestival.com for more information. All right. Panel at WAMC.org to write to us, and we move on. Well, actually, let's just check. Let's check letters. I want to know why the new media showed very old photos of patients from Africa over and over again without saying that the patients in Massachusetts and any other places in the U.S. are black and white, different races. Kids are now using monkey as a racial slur. This will feed right into it. That from Susan.
I think it's something to watch out for, yeah.
They've been using that for a long time.
Yes, that's true.
Howard Cosell lost his job because of it.
He called black people monkeys?
Well, somebody was running down the field, and he said, look at that monkey run.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was the last time he was ever on the air.
Isn't that interesting?
Yep.
I remember it vaguely.
Yeah.
Colin writes, COVID isn't over. Stop gaslighting the conscience. The conscious.
Could somebody explain that to me?
I don't know. I can't explain
COVID's
it.
Not over.
We've ever said it was. Right. But maybe they're just saying in general to people.
Yeah.
In which case, I agree. All right. Let's go
you
to...
You know, if you think ahead. About things... Oh, Joe, I just wanted to comment that if you think about things that are not over, you know, if you have the flu or a cold, well, if you go places, you often don't, you know, not go to that place because, you know, someone might have a cold or someone might have the flu, and you make good choices yourself. So maybe you go to work at the tail end of a cold or, you know, or after you don't have symptoms of the flu or something like that. And, you know, so we've kind of integrated that into our life and we haven't made it primary. And, you know, I mean, the medical experts are saying, and I really believe this, that COVID's probably never going to go away. But if we can get to some place where we're not now, by the way, where the deaths are small enough because you could still die from the flu rarely, where it's not so dominant in terms of the choices you make, you know, then you sort of feel like you're in a different place. But now you layer on the monkeypox, and we have no idea, you know, like other than washing our hands and maybe wearing a mask, if that's the advice, you know, we have no idea what to do. Maybe you get a shot, you know, maybe you get a smallpox shot. You know, I was trying to remember, didn't we all get smallpox shots when we were little? And is that true? And how long do they stay? This I don't know, but maybe there's some medical experts out there who know something about that.
Good point. All right, let's go on to Taiwan. President Biden indicated on Monday that he would use military force to defend Taiwan if it were ever attacked by China, dispensing with the strategic ambiguity traditionally favored, that's in quotes, traditionally favored by American presidents, and repeating even more unequivocally statements that his staff tried to walk back in the past. At a news conference with the Prime Minister of Japan during a visit to Tokyo, Mr. Biden suggested that he would be willing to go further on behalf of Taiwan than he has in helping Ukraine, where he has provided tens of billions of dollars in arms as well as intelligence assistance to help defeat Russia invaders, but refused to send American troops. You didn't want to get involved in the Ukraine conflict militarily for obvious reasons, the reporter said to Mr. Biden. Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that? Yes, Mr. Biden said flatly. You are? The reporter followed up. That's the comment we made, he said. The president's declaration, offered without caveat or clarification, set the stage for fresh tensions between the U.S. and China, which insist that Taiwan is a part of its territory and cannot exist as a sovereign nation. It also surprised some members of Mr. Biden's own administration watching in the room who did not expect him to promise such unvarnished resolve. The U.S. has historically warned China against using force against Taiwan while generally remaining vague about how far it would go to aid the island in such a circumstance. Alan.
Well, I think if you do that and if you say that kind of thing, you basically could be accused of provoking aggression from the Chinese. In other words, if you keep it vague, you know, the Chinese might be happy enough with it. But if you say it and the Chinese now feel that their honor or whatever else has been impugned, that may motivate them to move ahead. That's what I would worry about.
I was just thinking, though, but in light of what's happened with Russia and Ukraine, we might have a little bit more power to say it. I mean, if you think about it, my understanding is Taiwan's in a different set up different geographically. It's an island.
Yeah, sure.
It's an island. And so it would be harder, from what I read, it'd be harder to get them as much aid to Ukraine and to help them the same way we're helping Ukraine. I don't think that the European countries surrounding Ukraine wanted that conflict, that military conflict. I think my understanding that the allies in Asia would be interested in, like, are happy that he said that and in protecting standing up that way.
Sure. But the larger issue, of course, is what is it that makes us back off in Ukraine and then threaten the same thing we refuse to do in Ukraine in Taiwan if Taiwan is attacked? First of all, Taiwan isn't getting attacked, so I don't think it's I don't think it's really all of that relevant now, but he said it, and he's basically saying to the Chinese, you know, you could be a real enemy.
I really don't think he would have said it before February. I think he can say it
now. You may be right.
I think he really can say it now. I don't think he would have said it.
Well, he wasn't out of the room before White House officials were saying that his comments simply reiterated a pledge made through a 1979 law that the U.S. would provide Taiwan with the military means for self-defense. But in the current context, a presidential visit to Seoul and Tokyo and the West's urgent confrontation with Russia over Ukraine, the words had a more powerful resonance and prompted reactions from various countries in the region.
You know, Joe, I may be wrong about this. It wouldn't be the first time. But I think we have a commitment, a sort of vague commitment to Taiwan. But we also admit that Taiwan belongs to China. So that's a tough one.
Yeah, the one China policy is a longstanding bit of diplomatic the U.S. recognizes China's position that there is only one Chinese government, but does not accept Beijing's view that Taiwan mm-hmm. is a breakaway province under its rightful control.
Mm-hmm.
Libby?
You know, I think this probably does go back to that law, but I also think it's Biden's numbers aren't great, but they have gone up they've gone up on one thing because of the way he's dealing with Ukraine. He's being tough with Russia. And so I think the political calculus here is that, well, if he's tough with China, who's not necessarily an immediate threat to Taiwan, you know, that'll help him as well.
You think, Libby, that there's a big difference between China and Russia where...
Well, yeah, because Russia, you've got somebody who's willing to press the button, and I don't think China is.
Fran Berman.
Sorry, I was unmuting myself. As you say, it's just really tricky. There's such a history here on Taiwan and the relationship with China and the sense of ownership. So, you know, I've been listening carefully to my fellow panelists who have much more expertise about this than I do. And I'm just really trying to understand, you know, we know a lot about the past and the history of Taiwan and its strategic value to us. And not to even mention the people of Taiwan, but I'm trying to understand, as the world changes, and this brings in Ukraine and Russia and NATO and, you know, what's happening on a completely different end of the globe, you know, how those strategies are changing and what we should expect coming forward. And I'm just really interested in, you know, asking all of you, what do you think? And do you think that our current stance, which seems very much rooted in the past, works for the future? And I don't know the answer to that, but I'm interested in a question.
Who would like to everybody take a bat at the pinata that Fran has put up over in the door opening.
Hey, I'm a Southern California girl. I know pinatas really well.
We don't know.
There's an awful lot of quiet around here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Alan, you go.
Well, I don't know either. I mean, I just think it's interesting because, you know, history is really important. You know, as your favorite techie who really appreciates the humanities and the arts and all of the other things that make us really understand the world in a more fulsome way, we also have to understand the politics of where we're going, which, you know, these days are, you know, really strikingly different than the politics of 5 years ago. So I think that's important.
We got, go ahead.
Libby was nodding her head, so I assume she has something to say.
It's true. I mean,
oh, good to know, Libby.
Okay, good. I mean, the politics of today are very, very different. I mean, when, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I mean, growing up, the politics of when I was a kid was it was anti-war, but we understand who the threats were. And also the whole domino theory played into all of that, and some people bought it and some people didn't, and we all see that it really wasn't true. What the domino theory that's happening today is Russia wants it all back. You know, he wants to recreate the Tsar's domain. It has nothing to do with being a communist country. But I think the politics of today, you know, and how people will respond to this, you know, here we have Biden standing up for Taiwan. And on the other hand, you have Asian Americans being targeted with hate crimes in this country. And you had Trump calling it the Asian flu. Right. And so you have all of that in the atmosphere, and you won't have people standing up and saying, yes, we have to, as a whole, yes, we have to support Taiwan in its freedom, because a lot of people don't like those people because Donald Trump said not to do it. And, you know, not that he controls everybody, but that kind of demonization of groups of people has really much more permeated our culture and our politics. It used to be, people like me were demonized all the time. And, you know, that's just the way it was. Lesbians and gays, we were the demons in a lot of different ways. Now it's just about everybody.
I mean, for me, like, the simplest way for me to understand what's going on in our world is that the age of the empire is done. We're not going to let anybody, you know, colonize, rule, have an empire, go into other countries. It's just that's the line that people are unwilling to cross. The age of the empire is done. We don't want it anymore. It's not acceptable to go into other countries and colonize them. I know right now we're talking about what's going on in Puerto Rico a little bit. And so it's over. And I think that's the best way to think about it. For millennials coming up, we just don't want to see it.
Just for the sake of clarification, let me try to pick a fight with you.
Oh, no.
No big thing. But don't you think that there is a difference between stating things, I don't know how not to be inarticulate about this, but stating things, but also making it clear your position, which would have done the same thing as if you had said them in the older days. In other words, I think we have, you're looking properly askance at me, and I agreed with that.
Thinking about it.
Yeah.
Askance.
I
don't
think so.
Yeah, well, no, askance is a good word, isn't it? Maybe that's because I'm so much older than all of you. But I'm suggesting that we are in a position in which we don't say things, but we act them out, almost as if you're playing, you know, one of those parlor games. Does that make it clear? Doesn't to me. I was wondering if it did to you.
Sienna's looking to the heavens as if a star
is going to
come falling to Earth with an answer that she could give to Alan.
I don't want to tick him off.
I'm just trying to understand your question. Are you saying that people are acting without saying? So they may not say that they want to conquer it. Like, obviously, Putin didn't say he wanted to, you know, conquer it to his... But he does it anyway. Is that what you're saying, in essence?
Mm. know, maybe.
See, I don't.
Maybe.
I mean, I think Putin does want to conquer it all.
He does.
Yeah.
But is Alan saying that he didn't say it?
No, he's not going to be able to have it.
But, you know, Putin may be a dictator and he may be a terrible man. I think he is. But he's not dumb.
No, he's not.
He's not dumb. So he obviously has some sense of what he's doing and why he's doing it. And I think we have to tune into that. Maybe it's the fact that Russia has lost so much power over a fairly historically short distance, that he does these things because he wants to get something back for what's been lost. I don't know.
But here's the problem. What's acceptable is gaining power in your country through capital means, right? Making your country rich. What's unacceptable, I think, nowadays is going into other countries and taking them and taking their natural resources and trying to make your country rich.
Acceptable to who? You say acceptable.
I would say to the global international community.
Uh-huh.
I think just watching, everyone agrees what he's doing is wrong.
And he didn't know that was going to happen.
I think he thought he could get away with it.
You're probably right. Because I remember when he first went marching into Ukraine, mm-hmm. That I thought he was going to get away with it.
Exactly.
I think we all thought he was going to get away with it. I think that nobody thought that Ukraine would respond the way it did.
Yes, and it wasn't the Allied powers that got him out of it. It was them.
Right.
It was the Ukrainians, yeah.
It was Zelensky saying, no. No, this is who we are. This is our country. We're not going to just roll over like the guy, the previous guy did. I can't remember his name, with Crimea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he stood up and he spoke to the pride of the country and the country stood up.
Which historically has always been a pretty potent expectation you could have of any country that's been invaded, mm-hmm. including an early American experience with the British.
Right.
Fran, anything you'd like to add to that?
No, you know, I just find
sure about that now?
No, thank you, Joe. I prefer to move on.
No, I mean, I find this really interesting, but, you know, one of the places my mind was going to is I'm hearing this, you know, I hate to even say rumors on the radio because, like, people are think maybe that's a thing, and I don't know if it's a thing. I'm just curious. I am a scientist, by the way. But
and a very good one.
So lovely that you think that, but how would you know?
Oh, I know. By reputation and by hearing you over all of these years, yes.
Okay, well, I'm not going to argue.
And what other people say about you?
I'm not sure how you would know. But, okay, so here's what I have been hearing now and again that Putin is sick, that maybe he has cancer or, and, you know, like, is that true? And if that's true, how do you think that's playing into all of that?
And if it isn't true, then why is that rumor circulating? And is that part of a propaganda action maybe by this country?
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, I don't know. Does anybody have real data on that?
Well, I have something here in my back pocket. No, I don't know.
No, I don't think anyone would have real data on it because they're not going to let that information out so quickly.
Yeah.
No, and the question is, does this country still have a propaganda agenda, which includes the fact that this guy who is such a miscreant is ill?
John?
Well, of course we do. Mm-hmm. Of course we do. You know, I mean, every country has a propaganda agenda that, like, makes them the best and makes their enemies the worst. Mm-hmm. Of course we do. Don't you think?
I certainly think.
But whether or not...
What?
But the question is whether or not we're actually creating this propaganda or whether or not it's coming from news sources...
Within the country.
Right. Yeah. Within Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't comment on you know, specifics of this. Oh, I said, you know, again, how about that? But I mean, if you think about, you know, the digital world, we are all doing the same thing. We are all engaging in cyber war. We are all engaging in propaganda. We are all engaging in cyber espionage. Every single country is doing that, including the U.S. Huh. And some countries do it really well.
including the U.S. and China and Russia and lots of other places. And so we should not fool ourselves that we are playing by different rules. We're trying to win in this dysfunctional game that the whole world's, you know, involved in.
Well, just think about what Russia did to our election in 2016, you
right.
know? And so right. we're sort of trying to get back at them, maybe? I don't know.
Well, you know, I mean, we're trying to, you know, do the best we can by our own country. You know, why wouldn't we?
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have our last go-round with our panel. Sienna and I are going to figure out how to do a drinking game of whenever one of the panelists says, you know, we can take a shot.
Yeah, I think that's a good
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, that'd be good.
We have a drinking game of our own, but I think that's a good idea.
get blitzed by 10:30.
Right, right.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back, and we welcome your letter. and we'll pay you off, too, Libby. We'll help you
yeah,
we're, along you, the way.
You're right, you know.
panel at WAMC.org. The lockbox is open, WAMC.org.
Now that's important.
WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, Libby Post, and Fran Berman. We have a great panel, interesting discussion, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's talk politics. Let's talk Georgia. Let's talk primary. Tuesday's primary is the first big test of this controversial new election law in Georgia, which was opposed by voting rights groups as well as Democrats. But here we go. When the Spalding County Board of Elections eliminated early voting on Sundays, Democrats blamed a new state law and accused the Republican-controlled board of intentionally thwarting souls to the polls, a get-out-the-vote program among black churches to urge their congregations to cast ballots after religious services. But after 3 weeks of early voting ahead of Tuesday's primary, record-breaking turnout is undercutting predictions that the Georgia Election Integrity Act of 2021 would lead to a fall-off in voting. By the end of Friday, the final day of early in-person voting, nearly 800,000 Georgians had cast ballots, more than three times the number in 2018 and higher than in 2020, which was a presidential election year. Voting rights groups and Democrats say they have changed their strategies to mobilize voters under the new rules. In Spalding County, for instance, local activists moved souls to the polls to Saturday, and they defiantly promised that they would work twice as hard if that was what it took to protect voter access. Meanwhile, we watch what is going on in Texas. The primary is tomorrow, and we will see what happens there. Which all of these, as all of these primaries, yes, we still don't know what happened in Pennsylvania, so we're waiting on that right. one from last week. But Georgia will be interesting. What do you think?
I think that when you try to take people's rights away, mm-hmm. and then they say no, this is what happens.
Don't eat that cookie.
Right. I mean, there people. I think the African American community is going to come out en masse. I think we see that already in early voting. And I think the Republicans are going to be caught short in that. And I think that Stacey Abrams may very well win the gubernatorial race in November when all is said and done. People are angry that they tried to that they passed this law, even though, I mean, it's really not as bad as everybody says it is, and we're not saying no to people voting and blah, 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 you know, making all the political excuses you want. It was clearly Jim Crow 2022.
It was.
Yep. So.
Oh, yeah. After 15 years of having the same voting laws right. in place, 2020 comes, there's this a large amount of people going to the polls, and all of a sudden they want to take those same laws that worked so well in the past and right. change them. There's definitely racial animus, but what people tend to not forget is that we've been through the civil rights movement, and despite, you know, all the things during Jim Crow laws, people still came out to vote, and people will come out to vote. And what you see right now is, especially people of color, they're feeling very empowered to do it, because not only do we have Roe v. Wade taking away women's rights, but we also have this backlash from from the Black Lives Matter movement.
Right.
And you have people now in office saying that you can't teach, not critical race theory, but teach what happened in the past, history, accurately. That's what individuals want to be taught, so that their children understands, and that the students next to them understands what happened, and so we can break down the systematic racism, which is why you have the report, news report the other day, of a child going to someone's door with a whip, a Black family's door, and whipping on the door. I mean, it is, you know, as people of color, they're tired. And we really need to start addressing systematic racism. And that's why I think it's so important. And that's why you're seeing people get out to vote, because not only is it women's rights, but it's also this backlash going on in Georgia specifically against teaching history accurately.
So just to keep this all straight, we have the governor's race in Georgia. The current Republican governor, Brian Kemp, is seeking a second term in office, and former U.S. Senator David Perdue is looking to unseat him as a primary challenger. Other Republicans appearing on the ballot include Catherine Davis, South Georgia educator Dr. Candace Taylor, and retired civil serviceman Tom Williams. Meanwhile, Stacey Abrams, who ran against Kemp and Wass during 2018's gubernatorial election, is the presumptive Democratic nominee. Her name is the only one that will appear on the ballot, but will not officially be the nominee until after the primary. Meanwhile, you go to U.S. Senate. Senator Raphael Warnock has only been in the Senate for just over a year after winning a special election in November against former Senator Kelly Loeffler. Loeffler was appointed in the U.S. Senate after late Senator Johnny Isakson retired in 2019. He passed away in 2021. Senator Warnock is the presumptive nominee for the Democrats, but DeKalb County businesswoman Tamara Johnson-Shealy is also on the ballot. Six Republicans vying for the opportunity to represent the GOP come November. Chief among them, former NFL player Herschel Walker. Georgia Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black are among the most popular candidates. Also appearing on the ballot are former State Representative Josh Clark, U.S. Air Force veteran Kelvin King, former U.S. Army Special Forces Brigadier General Jonathan McCollum, and former Navy SEAL Latham Sadler. Then there is also a lieutenant governor race and an attorney general race, and other races throughout the state, including labor commissioner and agriculture commissioner. But those are the biggies tomorrow in the state of Georgia. Would anyone care to make predictions?
I just think that they're eating their young. I just love it. That's all.
In what way?
Well, there's so many of them are running against each other. I mean, you know, that shows that there's not the discipline that we all thought there might have been, especially in Georgia. But, you know, when Trump attacked mercilessly that's the football player. But the guy, the Secretary of State who runs the elections.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, and then he had death threats. I mean, his family had death threats because of Trump's attacking of him. I think that, you know, they are being split apart by the pro-Trumpers and people who are conservative. There's no doubt about it. They want to take our rights away, but they also don't want to just lock, stock, and barrel, give the party over to the craziness of Trump.
Raffensperger. Now, sometimes when you have internal dissonance, it's actually good because it opens things up. It makes people take sides. People get motivated that way. So, you know, we have to be aware that that's a possible outcome from all of this, as opposed to them trying to kill each other, in which case they may lose as a result, because there will be people who go to the polls and say, I'm not voting for this guy, even though he's our candidate, because he knocked my candidate out.
Do you guys remember the California election when we had about a billion people running for governor?
from all walks of life. There were, you know, various kinds of professionals, including, you know, prostitutes and all kinds of other fun people running for governor. And who did we get was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know what's going to happen, you guys. You just never know what's going to happen.
We, when it comes to the Herschel Walker race, Herschel Walker is expected to win that race, but then would run against Warnock, and that would be a much closer contest.
Oh, I have a question.
Yes.
How are we doing in terms of the money coming in?
I can just see Alan raising his hand.
Yeah, he did. Very
exactly
good.
Exactly what he did.
Ooh, what he did.
Yeah, Rorschach.
Horseshack,
right. Rorschach, too, a little bit, but that's okay.
Yeah. if you take the guy who goes ooh, and the guy who looks at inkblot drawings,
right, and that's what you get.
Rorschach, that's what you get. So we started at 230,000, and we're right now at 240,000.
Yeah, that's pretty good, and we haven't really been working at it.
So,
and if everybody wants to get this over with fast, this is a good time to do it right now. And how do you do that, Joe?
All you have to do is go to WAMC.org, and you can go online and you can pledge. It just says pledge now, and you press the button and you're set. You can also give us a call. We have a few people available to take phone calls. It's better to do it online, but if you can't and don't have access to the internet, we certainly understand that. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. You can also just put a check in an envelope and send it to WAMC, 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206.
Perfect, Joe.
Hey, all Joe, right. When you and Alan go on the road and you appear on my porch, maybe we could auction off, you know, pictures of you guys as promotional material. So.
Are you like on a first floor porch or is it a second floor porch?
No, I'm on a fourth floor porch.
A fourth floor porch? Oh, wow.
I want you to say that. 10 times fast.
No, I don't. I don't because we could lose our license. But
no, I have a great view of the tree line. So
that's great.
The tree line view. Yeah.
So what we'll do is we'll come over and then we'll just start like throwing out Alan bobbleheads to the crowds below.
There you go.
It's great.
There you go.
Help us out. It's the fund drive officially begins June 6th. June 6th is the day that Alan and I will come on and we'll talk to you and we'll hijack this program and we'll make, have to make the money to keep the radio station going. But we can reduce all of that in the time that we need to spend by putting money into the lockbox now. That date that I just mentioned, June 6th, is 2 weeks away, so we can make a big difference between now and then, and all you have to do is go to WAMC.org.
For one good reason, folks, it's your radio station. You made it happen at the beginning when we inherited the right to try to raise some money from the Albany Medical College, AMC, which used to own this, and it looked terrible. It looked like we weren't going to be able to do it, and... As in Henry Higgins, was that who was that? You did it. You did it.
Yeah, that's right. And I saw My Fair Lady the other night, Saturday night.
There you go.
How was it?
I loved My Fair Lady.
And me too. Let me say this. One is spoiled when one sees Rex Harrison, and so no one else can do Henry Higgins like Rex Harrison did. The woman who played Eliza Doolittle was great. She had a wonderful voice. The musicians, the orchestra was spot on. And, you know, Lynn and I are sitting there and, like, we could say the whole libretto and sing all the songs. I mean, you know, it's like
of
one
course,
of the things. It's my favorite musical, that and Camelot. I'm showing my age.
Oh, my gosh, Libby, it's also my favorite musical. I can't believe that we have that in common.
Oh, yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. So, but it was good. It closed yesterday. I mean, it was done.
Well, they had done their run. They didn't close.
No, they were done with their run.
Got to go to the next city is what they've got to do.
Right, but it was fun.
Well, that's excellent. Good stuff. All right. Well, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Please do what you can for the lockbox.
Please.
WAMC.org. Fran, you're great. Thank you very much. We appreciate
you being
on the phone.
Don't panic, you guys. Just wash your hands, okay?
Okay.
All right. Don't panic. Wash your hands.
Oh, that's what that is.
Oh, my God.
Libby, Sienna, thank you very much. Alan, thank you again, and reminding people, WAMC.org.
Kimo Sabe, we're together in this. We're going to make this happen.
WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this.